Hello to you, and welcome back to the Changing Banking Landscape, the podcast channel where we talk everything around finance, technology, and all that stuff in between, like transformation and customer experience. You know, those delicious things. Guys, this industry is a whirlwind of change and disruption. And our goal, and the goal really, is to stay as close to the pulse of everything. So that's why we're glad that you're here. My name is Jade Rue, and our topic today asks a big question. Does the world still need banks? Guys, it's no secret that in 2021, banking is no longer confined to just banks. It's also no secret that the term banking is no longer a place you physically go to. It's now a behavior. It's really something that we do. We bank. I mean, the marketplace has morphed significantly around how consumers are engaging with their financial institutions as a whole. Bank branches are no longer just banks, as I've said. They're cafes, grocery stores, clothing stores, car dealerships, and there's new ones popping up every day. So why do we need banks if I can do banking everywhere? Helping us unpack this today is Matthew Williamson. Matthew is the Vice President of Global Financial Services at Mobiquity. With over 20 plus years experience within banking, fintech, and consulting, it's fair to see there's a clear passion for finance here, Matt. Before Mobiquity, Matthew worked with brands like Mysis, Finastra, and Citibank, to name a few. Matthew, it's good to have you with us.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
Great stuff. Can I call you Matt?
Yeah, go with Matt. Matthew tends to mean I'm in trouble, so we'll go with Matt.
That's good to know. Good to know. Well, welcome, Matt. Also in studio is Mr. Elliot Lim. Elliot is the Chief Customer Officer at Mambu. With over 20 years experience also in banking, fintech, and consulting, Elliot has a well-deserved seat to answer this question for us. Elliot's also worked with the likes of Citibank, Barclays, and many more digital and traditional financial players throughout his career. Elliot, really good to have you with us.
Thank you, Jade. Great to be here. And I love the fact you called Matt Matthew. It makes me smile. I've known him for years, and I've only ever heard his wife call him Matthews. So I'm sure he's scared before we even start.
Well, this is a good foot to start on, because I'd heard that you guys know each other. So now I have a little bit of history. Interesting. Are we talking friends or foes here, though? I'm curious.
Depends on the day. Mostly friends. I mean, we've worked, I think, together four times previously.
Goodness.
And I was very drunk at Mac's wedding 14 years ago. So we go back quite a way in a lot of different ways. But very much, very good friends.
Very good to know. Matt, do you agree? Or is the jury still out?
No, I would agree. I'd say you could throw in frenemies at times if you want to clash the two together. But yeah, Elliot and I have known each other and worked together very well for many years. So we have a very... Between us have a very broad and sometimes different opinions on the marketplace, but that's all the more valuable.
Absolutely. Well, that's good to know, and it's good to have you both with us. Guys, let's kick off. I'm curious to know, what is your reflex response to a question like, does the world still need banks? Matt, I'm going to start with you.
Thanks. So we know that's a phrase that's been bandied around for a long time, triggered by Bill Gates in the early 90s, I think it was. And the reality is, it's a mixed question in that we do need banking and we need banking services. Where do banks sit within that is very interesting. You know, if we look at the facts of the way a bank invests and works well with their customers is the service offering behind the scenes. We've seen the fintech and big tech world moving into this. And if you look at the shift to digital that was happening prior to COVID-19 and now how much it's accelerated through that, we need banking services, but where banks sit within that is a different measure. So, you know, things like Google Plex, Amazon services and Amazon Go, the banks need to work out where they're best going to sit in this marketplace if they want to survive and thrive, as opposed to being a traditional banking service provider.
Yeah, good answer. Elliot, what's your thought?
I'd love to disagree with him, but I think Matt was almost articulate for a minute there. So yeah, everything Matt said, I do agree with, but we don't need banks the way banks have always been, is my view. So pre-2008, we all worked in banks at the time. Myself and Matt both worked at the same bank, and everybody was good. The markets were good. People made money. And then we had the catastrophe of the financial collapse, and we didn't really as an industry learn a lot of lessons. We did sort of three or four generations of banking after that. First of all, we started looking at white glove treatment by customer segmentation, but it meant actually for the majority of customers, they got worse customer experiences. We then looked at technology to try and fix it by putting APIs in place, putting technology as the silver bullet, which it never really was. And again, it added complexity, which led ultimately to worse customer experiences. Yes, we need banking and we need banks, but I think banks are more of a trust token in the future. And I think to rebuild that trust and to rebuild that customer-centric way of working, we need to do something different. And it's not just as simple as saying, hey, well, we had neos and challenger banks come along and try and redefine banking against the old guard. Because unfortunately, a lot of the challenger banks, 12 months after they launched, already had regulation, the limitations of even legacy architecture and processes because of the people that were in there and starting them up, that they, within 12 to 18 months, just ultimately became a bank. So yeah, I would agree we definitely need banks in the future, but I think it's defining what that bank is, which is really fundamental.
Yeah, and I mean, that makes sense. I mean, so what we're really saying is that banking is changing much faster than banks are. And that's, I think that's the real, you know, the question here. But I'm curious, Matt, why are things changing?
The reason things are changing is customer adoption of e-commerce, which was compressed into, you know, 10 years worth of consumer adoption. Was compressed into 3 months or so during the pandemic. And while, you know, it was to be expected that people would stay at home, the velocity at which the consumers adapted the technology forced businesses to then say, we need to accelerate our digital plans. When you look at this, and digitization is an intensification of competition, and you can never get away from being competitive. So banks have to look at how they can change and the banking community as a whole. And I mean that more broadly than just a bank. I mean new entrants, fintechs, etc., to make sure that they offer the best service that's available. In the old traditional days, you know, the best service was you went into a branch and you got seen by a teller as quickly as possible. And the queues were managed with more tellers. Now we're seeing that's not realistic. You know, if we use a point around HSBC forced to announce branch closures with up to 82 branches set to close between April and September this year. We saw yesterday, really interestingly, that Marks and Spencer Bank have announced they're going to close their current account offering by August, citing that the shift to online banking has forced them to close accounts. So you've seen a customer behavior shift that's occurred, and people are either being too late to react to it or not understanding the value of getting on top of this and ahead of customer behaviors in the digital world that will only be to their benefit as time goes on. You're going to see a difference between those that adopt and succeed versus those that are just sit back and wait and see.
Elliot, what's your take?
Absolutely. I think there's a couple of other dynamics as well. I think the timing of where we are with the global pandemic is expediting a lot of these things that may have taken years to happen. And it's not just because, you know, customer experiences aren't based more and more on, you know, we've almost completed Netflix throughout this time because there was nothing else to do. We're used to the iPhone, we're used to the different ways of working, access to things. Things move very quickly. We have an agile life, an agile world. That segmentation, when it comes into banking, we have to sort of adapt the way banks think. Banks have always had these long scale, 5-year transformation projects. The return on investment was never really there. It's sort of an untalked about rule within banking that these large, long scale transformations fail for a couple of reasons. Firstly, that the people leading them will probably move roles before they're completed. And secondly, the benefits analysis and realization at the end of these to check the ROI has never really been as great as it really should have been. At times, there never could possibly be a positive ROI. So we're seeing that people now see that this unknown future we've always spoken about in the industry is upon us. So how do you plan for an unknown future? You can't have a 5-year transformation. You need to do renovations. You need to think differently about this. If you're looking at a 18-month plan, anywhere beyond that doesn't make sense at the moment because things are changing too fast. So with this whole different customer experiential behavior and expectations that Matt hit on and the current world we live in that is an unknown future, banks like the rest of the world have to change. Banking has never been, or banks have never been, an industry that has changed or been a forerunner for change and trying to drive things different. Been a little bit left behind. And I think this shift to digitization and modernization is something they should have done a long time ago, but what's really been the driver for it? So I think you're getting to a perfect storm at the moment where previously everything's been held up back by regulation and by a very much a risk aversity. That is now changing to think, right, we've got to think different. We have to catch up with the rest of the customer experiential experience in the market. And we have to make sure that we can build for this unknown future that gives one side of it better service and customer experience, as I said several times, but secondly, also allows us as a bank or a financial services player to build something that protects our business and builds the bank we don't just need for today, but the bank we need for the future.
Yeah, Elliot, I mean, that's a great answer. And you touched on a lot of interesting stuff there. I like that, you know, you can't plan a five-year transformation anymore. I like that. And very, very true. Matt, anything to add to what Elliot just said?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting points that Elliot's raised. And there was a very interesting review that was done, I think about a week ago, by MIT Sloan Management Review. And they talked about digital savviness in the C-suite. And they came up with some quite alarming statistics around how digital savvy the leadership team is versus how that translates into action. So to reference the points Elliot made about five-year plans, etc., you have to become digitally enabled cultural entity in order to understand where things are going and what's going to happen. If there's only one or two people inside the organization that get it and understand it and realize the metrics for success have changed, then you're really going to struggle to have any major impact either into your customer base or into your market. So retaining your market composure, retaining your market segmentation. We know it's very difficult to understand exactly what the future holds because we've seen how much has happened in the last 18 months that's accelerated us. But anywhere where banks look at where their customers are going to be potentially and understand that what's really important to a customer as we move to more of a touchless environment is understanding, you know, the human touch point. It can be digital, but as long as there's a human-centric approach to things, then that's where banks are really going to get in a better place. And if we think about things like community financial services hubs, those type of models, we're really going to see an interesting shift in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Very, very interesting. So guys, I mean, I'm certainly having this question answered in the sense that, yes, we do need banks. But Elliot, to touch on something you said earlier, which is that perhaps we'll see a shift in the role that banks are playing in the future. I'd like to elaborate a little bit on that, Elliot. What does that mean? And what are your kind of predictions, if you will, on this role shift that we may see in future?
Yeah, absolutely, Jade. I will say that the first thing is anybody who makes a prediction in the banking market or in the world in general at the moment is a fool. So I won't say these are definitely predictions, but I'll say, in my view, there are some things that I think we already see changing and will change in the future. First of all, if you look at the big picture, I do still think that there will be a shift in the banking market, as in we will see a return to relationship banking. We already see that this idea of individual banking experience is important for individuals and for SMEs, corporates. I think that it's going to be very important that we have this understanding that everybody needs a different bank. I want something from my bank different to what Matt wants from his bank and what you want from your bank. And we'll definitely see a shift of that. And I'll see premium services being offered for it. I think on the other side of that, we'll see a commoditized banking market. So it will be people do what they're best at. You know, an underlying philosophy of what we have at Mambu is we believe that we should be the best at core banking and lending. And we believe we should play with people and we should use composable architectures and models where we use the people who are the best at what they do. And I think banks go the same way. You could be the greatest SME lender at the right price for the right segmentation. That should be available for sort of an open market. And I think banks' real position in this, because I think that customer experiential may be taken in the future again, I'm predicting when I said I wouldn't, by sort of the big tech players that were getting more actively involved. And you see the likes of Amazon, you see the likes of Apple, you see many of these players come into the market and start offering more financial services. They have that trust of the consumer. But the bit, if you take it down to what a real bank's value as, it's the market trust. It's the regulated entity part. Ironically, the other side that they were always great at was the capital reserve. They had the liquidity. But as you're seeing the likes of Apple, Amazon, et cetera, have such a reserve on their balance sheet, that's less relevant. So a bank becomes a trusted token and the ability to actually drive the back end services for what I think may be front end offerings and experiences offered by the big tech players. But again, you know, I just rattled for 5 minutes saying I wasn't going to predict, and then predicted at least four things. So I apologize.
Well, we well received either way, Elliot. So thanks for that. Matt, what are your thoughts in terms of not predicting, but predicting what may happen?
The one thing I would say I can definitely predict is that everyone's trying to de-risk themselves, right, in any way possible without necessarily understanding what does that mean. So there are lots of areas that, were, you know, to reflect on what Elliot was saying, because I think he's spot on, is be really good at what you're good at and then forget about everything else, or partner with others that enable you to offer a better service or an exceptional service or experience rather than just an okay one because I happen to have it as an offering. If we look at people who are entering into the market, Elliot mentioned some of the big techs, you look at IKEA taking, I think it was either 49 or 51% stake in a bank, for example, a massive shift. But it makes sense because, you know, they appeal to the masses. Everyone knows who IKEA is as a brand. You then have people going and they're constantly to buy furniture, etc., for their homes. It makes sense to then have a financial services offering that maybe, you know, you go in there and you think, actually, I need a bigger home. So I need to speak to someone about a mortgage, or I need an extension, or whatever it is. But equally, you know, an example I give quite a lot about transformation in the UK is my grandmother used to collect her pension every Tuesday morning. She and her friends would meet at the post office, stand in queue for 2-3 hours, however long it took to get to a teller, and get their pension for the week. That's been replaced by being paid directly into their bank account. The interesting shift on that is that actually they all enjoyed that communal element of meeting together and queuing for a couple of hours and catching up on, you know, on the weekly comings and goings. So now they still meet at the same time, ironically, at the same place, bar one unit across, whereby they sit and meet for coffee for a couple of, you know, for a couple of hours, and they pass the time about the week. So they're still experiencing something that was important to them as a subset of completing financial services. So, you know, I would suggest that in the future you will see an element where you have a community hub, let's use a coffee shop as an example, where you can go there and have access to financial services, be it from a big tech provider on your phone, or perhaps the big brands come together and say, you know, let's use HSBC, Lloyds, TSB, for example. We're going to partner with someone like a Starbucks or a Costa, and all three of our service offerings are going to be available when you're in one of those coffee houses. It's not too big a stretch.
Yeah, it also makes perfect sense to just, you know, match two really good experiences.
And the brands associated with that. And then there's the flip side of that as well, which is going to be, as you become more flexible in your way of thinking, then you can attract, on the subset shift, you can attract more talent to your organization that can fulfill better customer experiences through technology, through contactless, through human touch points, human centricity, etc. So it's bigger than, we, you know, Elliot and I both said we're not going to make predictions and then failed miserably. You know, my prediction is that the way we're moving, we're going to attract more talent across these different brands. You may even have a banking talent in a coffee house or in a coffee chain, for example, to understand how to apply that experience within their shop and their brand.
Yep. Well, it sounds like the definition of bank as a whole, you know, needs to change, because it is changing anyway. So that's quite curious. Another question around, because what I realize, actually, both Matt and Elliot, you guys at some stage in your career have been bankers, some stage you've been technologists, and at some stage you're consultants. So you've got this ability to wear different hats, which I think is great. So I want to ask you a question, and I want to ask you to put your banking hat on for a second. What are the stuff that's sitting in front of me right now, if I'm a banker, that I could be doing differently to keep up with demands, the digital side of things? What should I be doing? What's in front of me? Elliot, with your banking hat on, how do you answer that question?
I've lost my banking hat a while ago, but I just found it in the drawer next to me. So I'll actually just spin it on something Matt said, actually, and I'd like to sort of answer the question and rephrase it back as a question to Matt. So with my banking hat on, I think I always used to look at things differently. So it was always sort of any decision I made was sort of in an inverse pyramid. So I had to tick the risk box first, then the cost box, then the revenue box. Then at the side was sort of the customer bit that we always said we were customer centric, but I'm not really sure we always were. I think that, you know, that is sort of the pyramid that got me promoted. It got me rewarded and everything else. I think the shift is very much that it's the type of risk. You know, Matt mentioned that everybody's going to manage risk, reduce risk better, and I completely agree with him. But not just credit risk, market risk, customer attrition risk, technical risk. I think there's actually a bigger risk now, which is around agility. And, you know, me and Matt have joked about this for years. Banks tend to move at the speed of bank, which is not particularly fast if you look historically. And so I think what people can do is sort of move away from that perceived technology risk of doing things differently, and in as in, hey, we've got to be very careful, this is unproven, to that real business risk, very real business risk of not doing something today and not being agile, not being able to drive the market differently and do things differently and think differently. I mean, I think that's huge. And Matt, I was intrigued in your view about this. I don't really think we've ever spoken about it, about that shift from, you know, the risks have always been that credit risk and tech risk has always been there, but the actual risk of to the business of not doing something, not being agile, not being digital, I see that as a real thing that people can do differently and think differently about. I wondered what you were thinking.
This is something we used to discuss at length internally when we were both in the bank. I know we keep referring back to that, but we have this constant juxtaposition between you are a bank that does tech, as in that's, you know, your tech supplements the bank, versus you're a tech shop within banks. And they're two very different things, and they are very differently incentivized and have different areas that they can work on. So you know, when you, to the points Elliot was making, if you look at things how you've always looked at them from a banking standpoint, and there are reasons behind it, you know, regulated pressures, etc. So we shouldn't, you know, lambast them, we should help educate and bring them along on the journey. You've got to change the way you're thinking, you know, and it is a cultural thing. It's not let's find some really cool tech and map it across a problem, because that's never, ever worked, ever. There's a reason there's a litany in the history of banking, you know, for the last 50 years of phase one and two of a program that then didn't work. You know, and then it got shut down, and then suddenly there's a review on, you know, we spent hundreds of millions of dollars and achieved very little. So, you know, online banking is a really important element. Customer experience is a very important element. But you have to get ready to model for this post-COVID world, because the world isn't going to go back to where it was. There is, you know, the new normal has been bandied about quite a lot, but the new normal is going to be flexibility, but it's just the normal. That's it. And so if you're unable to be flexible and pivot, you're really going to struggle to capture market or even retain market share, you know, let alone go after new elements. So I think if I am going to be brutal for a moment, people need to take a really hard look at themselves and be very, very objective, even if it's, you know, a bitter pill to swallow, to say, are we in the right mindset? Are we in the right place? Are we actually serving our customers well? Now, it's easy to walk, you know, to talk the talk, but to walk the walk and then actually say, no, we're not, that's a very difficult thing to do and a very emotional thing to do, let alone then act on top of that. So you know, we're seeing that as time goes on, the new entrants, the big techs, etc., are gaining momentum, but they're also now partnering with banks. If we go back 5 years, you know, when especially when fintech banking really kicked off, you had this juxtaposition of the fintechs are here to destroy the banks, and the bank saying, you don't understand how it works, it'll never happen, no problem. Now we've moved forward in it, you know, the fintechs have understood actually banking is really hard for numerous reasons. It's not just tech. And banks have understood, oh, these guys are stealing quite the march on us and getting massive customer numbers. There is a playing field in the middle where we can collaborate together. Now, how well that collaboration happens is going to come down to component parts and transformation like Mambu and others out there, and you know, Mobiquity, and how we enable our customers to understand the customer journey to make sure the outcome is customer orientated, not just a cool piece of tech, for example. So I've rambled on for a minute, but it's really important that everyone understands banking is incredibly challenging. Anyone who says otherwise doesn't understand it, but that's not an excuse not to innovate and not to push and change your mindset in order for a better outcome.
Yeah, absolutely. Some good advice there. I mean, guys, just for a second, keeping your banking hats on, I'm curious to know, you both have very transformative mindsets, if I may be so bold. If I had to put you in a scenario of working, you know, with a traditional bank, and you have this transformative mindset, but your colleagues don't, what did you do in that moment to help move things along or try and influence that people thought differently? Elliot?
That's a great question, actually, Jade. I'm glad you came to me first because obviously I have more intelligence than Matt and more experience, so I think that's probably the right move. Joking aside, I think to be honest, it's interesting. I probably put myself back in their shoes. I mean, I go back to a time where, I would almost jokingly call myself at times in my career a fintech assassin.
Oh, wow.
So if you go back, and I won't mention the banks, but I've worked in places where, you go back 10, 15 years, the way that innovation was dealt with and that the fintechs before they were called fintechs were dealt with was you would do it in three ways through the innovation labs. You would either bring in some very smart kids with a great idea, bring them into the innovation lab, and then slowly try and turn them into bankers, which guess what? That's not what they wanted to do. That didn't work. The second way you'd do it would be to invest in their company and help them to try and grow, but you would make sure that you kept everything on their roadmap for the next 12 months to 2 years, and therefore they had no way to grow, and that didn't work, and they died. But the third way was basically my personal favorite, which was, yeah, of course, we'd love to work with you. Come and do an unpaid POC for 12 months, run out of runway, and therefore you don't work and you die. There are many of us now that have moved from the bank side into the tech side, into fintech, myself, Matt, many other people we know in the industry. And I think that was probably a big thing for people to realize that actually there was light at the other end of the tunnel. I think if I go back into a bank now and sort of take a step back, I come to some of the points we mentioned earlier around how do we get them to think differently? How do we get them to sort of think in this new way? And the only way to do it is, first of all, it's actually going back to an old way of working. It's ethos, pathos, logos, sort of the very ancient Greek way of thinking and trying to get people on side, which is, hey, look, I used to sit in your chair. I was senior in a bank. I understand where you're coming from. I understand your problems. But I also understand the limitations in how you're doing this and the mindset. So I think you have to challenge them back a bit and be a bit out there and not try and sort of bow down to them and say, guys, I used to be wrong as well. And this is the way of thinking, this is a way of driving. Now, I don't think you need to have these conversations very often now. In my experience, 99% of banks or bankers are at a point now where they understand how important this is. It's been driven, and I think the move to being much more customer-centric and understanding that customers need to drive the innovation and moving away from this bank-centric model, because that really is the learning that I think most of us took away and that we have to share with people. It's a bank always used to be at the center of the entire changes that happened. They would always dictate what was needed, dictate to their customers, dictate to their suppliers, dictate to everybody, underpinned by regulators and there from the side also come in the consultants, where again, myself and Matt have both worked that side. It's an interesting one when you suddenly realize that things like PSD2, open banking have opened up some very interesting ways of driving new innovation, new ways of thinking, new ways of doing things that aren't controlled by the bank. And I think as soon as the banks realize they are no longer just in charge of all the revenue generation and everything else, they realize is that more fair share of wallet, a collaborative model where they can have a shared strategy, a shared value outcome. It's that mindset shift. So for me, if I did find those rare people now that really weren't on board with the move to everything changing in the industry, I would sort of try and educate them on the mindset shift. And it's very quick and easy to sort of validate the things that are happening in the markets, the speed that things are changing. Again, look at things that have happened during COVID. We at Mambu have seen regulators around the world. In India, they gave payment holidays on interest for loans, and they gave the banks or the loan companies less than a week to actually turn it around. And so there has to be that innovation, that drive. We've seen with the banks in South America, they are giving funds. So the government have to give funds to keep people alive. They've lost their jobs. Unemployment, health, etc. is really rife at the moment. But there was no way actually of dispersing the funds because the old systems, the old banks actually didn't allow for it for a multitude of reasons. It's very easy at the moment to sort of point at human factors and drivers within the market that aren't just about a bank on how they do that. So I would basically take an education stance and help drive them. But I'm sure Matt also has a equally interesting and probably different view on this thing.
Matt, jump in here. What's your view?
Oh, many views, many things we could say. I'll try not to take us on a trip of a couple of hours. I think if I started off, I'd say banks have got to ensure that their brand and digital infrastructure aligns with what the customers want, but not only to have the right technology in place, but also to make sure that, that human touch point is there so they can support both their existing customers and new customers along a journey towards digital and remove any frictions, because friction is still a problem. And I'll come on to some more of what Elliot was saying in a moment, to get to a proper seamless digital banking experience. And as Elliot mentioned, that doesn't necessarily mean that the bank has to be the entire owner of that experience. There may be other elements. And if we look at, you know, the online banking market is expected to grow, I think somewhere around, it says around, and then you'll quote an exact percentage, 13.6% compound annual growth over the next 6 years. And the total number of online and mobile banking users will be over 3.6 billion in just 3 years' time. That's pretty scary. So to your point then about what should banks do, how should they think, we created a seven-step process to get on that journey. And I referenced some of it earlier around the, you know, be brutal with yourself. You know, you've got to build a vision. You've got to evaluate your genuine business model, current and future possible ones as well. Explore through your offerings. You know, again, this is all being very honest and objective with yourself, and it is a hard thing to do. Looking at your extensions to core offerings. So is it something you should do or someone else should do with you, for you? The cultural shift we've already referenced, and launch that digital experience as quickly as possible and learn, and then measure and refine at speed as you can. But equally, the mindset change internally into the banking community is there for a multitude of reasons. And Elliot touched upon it, you know, with his banking hat on other points, is where do you go forward? How do you go forward? And the answer is you do something now, even if you haven't got all your ducks in a row, which is very hard to do. You start now and then you look forward and you add in other elements. Elliot referenced Latin America earlier. I found a really interesting stat recently when I was speaking with some people in Mexico around the over 55 generation, traditionally very hard to reach digitally or to convert into, you know, leveraging digital services. And they said they've had an exponential growth of digital services in the over 55s based on Uber Eats. So as soon as the pandemic came in and that generation didn't want to leave the house, you know, not go shopping necessarily, they started leveraging takeaways like you wouldn't believe. And they suddenly had this experience where actually less than 5 minutes, I found an app, I've downloaded it, I've onboarded myself to it, I've set up payment details, and my food's on its way. Turn that around, and then why was that so easy to order food, and yet my bank forces me to ring up people? You know, it all has to be aligned with customer expectations. I think that's what it is. And by leveraging partners, that's the best way you can get move forward and have a different view and perspective, whether it's a geopolitical view, a regulated view, or a technology view.
Absolutely. Some good answers there. I don't know if I would give a badge to one of you. I think right now it's a tie. I'm going to call it a tie.
In that case, I'll make one more point. No, but seriously, though, I think just because Matt just picked up on call trigger, and I know we've spoken about it a couple of times, I'd add that to one of the most fundamental things. And I think it is something I'm seeing more and more in the market. There's been a big drive as banks and the industry has started to work more close. And we've talked about collaboration. You know, at Mambu, we have this composable architecture and the composable approach, business model, mindset. I think as you drive this to a natural conclusion, the co-innovation, the co-development is all great, and it's part of the way to move. Where we see that this works brilliantly, and it's what Matt just referenced with the right partners that reminded me, is building this co-culture. Having a culture that fits outside or beyond the boundaries of your organization. So I think at Mambu, we have an amazing culture. It's absolutely phenomenal. But our culture should also go beyond us, into our partners, into the ecosystem, into our customers. We should have this way. So aligning your strategy and value outcomes, as I said earlier, is great. But if you can underpin that with a culture, then a way of thinking, a way of communicating, and a way of operating that fits across all the different players in that ecosystem, then you get something very special. And I think that is where we get some differentiation and real, real strategic growth and driving different behaviors within the market.
I love that word co-culture, and very true, very true. So let's hope that we've got the banks out there that are realizing the value of partnering with the right people. Fingers crossed. So guys, based on what you've said, I mean, it's really clear to me that it's really essentially about how well banks are adapting their thinking, their strategies, their operation to a connected world, right? It's about how they're responding to shifts and the pace of demand and how well they're not. So the answer really is, yes, we do need banks, but we need and demand better. Guys, just as a closing question, what advice, given the fact that we know banks are risk adverse by nature, And sometimes we coast and we'd rather watch and see what happens before we take a stand or do something. What advice do we have for the financial players that are the coasters, that are waiting to see what happens before they do anything? Matt, what's your advice?
My advice is you've got to create a personalized judicial experience in the context of COVID-19 that your customers have experienced for the first time and they want to see more. They're not necessarily going to want to revert back to the branch in the traditional sense. They're going to want to move forward. And you know, a wait and see approach is no longer an option. You're seeing new entrants coming in. And Elliot referenced it earlier, rightly so. The really scary thing about new elements is big tech, because they do have the balance sheet to ride loss leaders for a long time just to gain traction and market share. A bank necessarily can't do. Also, we found that we launched a banking friction report recently talking about digital experience and how you are perceived in the market. And we found that, we'll refer to UK retail banks for a moment, they had an average app rating of 4.7 out of 5 on specific app features. But then when you actually dug into it, suddenly it was as low as 2, 2.5, 2.6, depending on how they're interacting. You can always make a metric look good, but you need to dig further under the surface to really understand what that means and if it's good or not. My final summarization is I spoke with a bank who remained nameless recently, and we talked about first-time connection. And that was a real challenge. So using your app, you don't connect into your service the first time. And when I spoke with them, they said, actually, we're pretty happy with that because we've got a 97% hit rate. I said, well, that's really cool. 97% rate from an infrastructure perspective is really good. But let's translate that into a customer number. That means X number of customers cannot successfully access their money to achieve their financial goals the first time or even the second time they try it. That can't be an acceptable metric. And then suddenly cogs turned and that metric was refreshed. And actually, that's not acceptable. We have to address it now.
So coasting is not an option.
Definitely not.
Elliot, from your side, what's your advice to the coasters out there?
Don't coast would be the first one. Being risk averse is fine. Moving slowly, not having the agility isn't. That's where you're going to have huge problems. You need to actually make some forward movement. You need to have it strategically planned, but don't try and wrap it into a, like I said earlier, a five-year transformation. Do it in bite-sized chunks. I think also you've got to find that right partners, find that right ecosystem. I think trying to do it as an island now is probably a mistake. So I certainly wouldn't think you can do things the way you've always done it. So really don't think about what technology can you throw at it. Don't even think about starting with the business model you throw at it. Think about the mindset. Understand how do you start to communicate better? How do you get that shared value? How do you actually work with other people, not putting yourself or your organization front and center? Because do you know what? The value becomes much more exponential when you multiply it across other organizations and develop that co-culture. If you're sitting on the sidelines at the moment and doing nothing, you're probably not going to survive. And so I think in the unlikely event people are still coasting, the time has come to stop looking and listening, find those right partners, get out there and just do something. That for me would be the fundamental.
Some great advice to close on as well. Guys, a big thank you to you, Elliot and Matt, for sharing your insights with us today and really helping us ask the right questions. Instead of, does the world still need banks, is, are you a bank that the world wants? I think definitely a much more pertinent question to ask. But guys, sincerely, thank you for your time and for joining us. And I'm sure we're going to hear more from each of you in future. So thanks again. To you, our listeners, thank you for your ear time, as I like to say, and also for the great support we've received around the series. We're glad that you like it. Remember to visit our official podcast webpage. That's podcast.mambu.com. And join the conversation. Guys, we'd love to hear your thoughts and comments and any specifics that you'd like to hear in our next episode. Remember, when you're there, to hit the subscribe button so we can let you know when the next episode is available. Till next time, I wish you good health and good weather, in that order. Goodbye for now.